Octa Nonverba is a show that's raw and real, featuring hard-hitting interviews with people that live by the ethos of actions, not words. Marcus Aurelius Anderson is a TEDx speaker, best-selling author, veteran, and leadership and mindset coach. With this show, you get to join Marcus as he goes inside the minds and experiences of the world's most successful warriors, leaders, entrepreneurs, and experts. With each episode, you're going to get the philosophies, concepts, tactics, and strategies these leaders use to turn adversity into victory. Live an extraordinary life based on actions, not words. Now, here's your host, Marcus Aurelius Anderson.
Octa Nonverba is a Latin phrase that means actions, not words. If you want to know what somebody truly believes, don't listen to their words. Instead, observe their actions. I'm Marcus Aurelius Anderson, and my guest today truly embodies that phrase. Jeff Odie Espenship is a former U.S. Air Force fighter pilot, flight leader, international airline captain, safety leadership speaker that's speaking all around the world and is in very high demand for that, author of Target Leadership, husband, an all-around great guy. You can find out more about him at targetleadership.com. Odie, thank you so much for being on. As we were mentioning before, our mutual friend, Dr. Joe Kometz, incredible connector, incredible chiropractor in California. I cannot thank him enough for how much he's helped me just when we were in chiropractic school together trying to get through the damn thing, but also introducing me to people like you. And I was introduced to you 6 years ago. My TEDx had just come out. My first book had just come out. And I've been watching you in the wings and admiring what you do and trying to emulate and walk in your footsteps. So thank you so much for being here today.
Amen, brother. Man, it's great to be here. And yeah, big shout out to Joe Kometz for introducing us. I met him on an airplane flight and we hit it off like immediately, talked all the way. We're going to Pennsylvania. So, and I was going to give a talk there. And I mean, we just hit it off. And we ended up living close to next to each other in Atlanta. So yeah, great guy.
Yeah. And this is how a lot of these things become very synergistic. Everything kind of comes together. And he was saying, hey, I've got this guy I want to introduce you to. And I was like, sure. And then when I looked into you, I was like, wow, this guy's like actually really doing stuff. You know, I don't even know if I can want to reach out and say hi to this guy yet. I don't know if I should be in the room.
Yeah, I also paid him $20. So
I'm going to give you $100 then. We'll see what we can get out of that. You said something tremendous at the very beginning. And because we're going to talk about leadership, we're going to talk about your experience, we're going to talk about safety. You have all these huge companies that are seeking you out for your quality and your message. But you mentioned this idea about experience.
Yes.
Tell me your definition of experience and why that's important.
You know what, Marcus? Experience is that thing you get after you need it, unless you are willing to listen and learn from the experiences of those who've gone before you. You know, when I go in and I get ready to speak to a company, I tell them straight up, listen, I'm not smart enough to teach you anything new. So there might be some experience, some nebulous nugget of needless knowledge that I may pass along to you that might get you to rethink and refocus what it is you're doing in that moment. Because a lot of times, this is what I've seen in the airline world and also as a fighter pilot, people, when they get themselves in trouble, it's not something that they've thought out. They don't go to work that day thinking, you know what, I'm going to break rule number 27 today. I've always wanted to break that rule. No, it's usually in a moment. I call it an emotional snap decision, just something that you just decided to do. And the next thing you know, you do something dumb, dangerous, or different, something you swore you'd never done before, would do before because you heard someone else do it. And there you find yourself in the same boat. So when I go and I speak, I try to relay my experiences directly to the audiences who work in high-risk and dangerous work environments. These are your petroleum workers, chemical, construction, manufacturing, utility, nuclear, you name it, I've been there, all up and down, from coast to coast, to Canada, to South America, and all points in between. It's a timeless message that I speak, and it's just from my experiences of leadership, really.
And I think that that's something that we have to be reinforced continually, as we were discussing earlier. And tell me, what is the biggest misconception that you hear continually repeated about leadership?
You know, I think a lot of companies bring me in under the umbrella of safety. hey, we need to have a safety talk. We're having people taking a lot of shortcuts and being a lot complacent. And I always say, well, sure, I can come in and talk about safety, but I really don't, because I don't have safety salve. I don't have a magic pill that anybody can swallow. I know deep down it's personal value-based leadership. It's just the person going out there, making a decision to do it right every single day, because your actions, what you're doing, and this is why this is your company name, what you're doing says way more than your words. And I get to share with them a leadership fail in my world as a pilot. I was flying in the air show world, and my brother, who was not a pilot, would go with me every air show. And there's a small procedure that you're supposed to do with the airplane. The type of airplane that we were flying is called check for a hydraulic lock, where you pull the propeller blade through. Well, we got in a hurry one day, or I got in a hurry. I wanted to leave before a thunderstorm hit. It would have been nothing to wait out the storm, but I basically told him to forget that procedure. Don't worry about it. So he looked at me with a questioning attitude, right? That's a healthy thing to have. And boy, I could certainly talk the talk. I knew all the safety words. Hey, if you see something's not right, you speak up and you say something to me and I'll listen. But see, in that moment, I rationalized away what is right, took a quick shortcut because I felt pressure that I put on myself. Nobody else was putting it on me to get that work done, get out of there before that thunderstorm hit. And another thing, too, is we rationalize away what is right because that engine, for example, to always work. So you may be out there working in the field and go, well, we're going to take this quick shortcut because we've always gotten away with it. It always helps us get done 15 minutes earlier. And pretty soon that behavior becomes normalized and it's a deviant behavior. So something I showed my brother that week, he repeated that behavior 2 weeks later. And the guy that he was with, the engine actually failed on them and it killed them both. They both lost their life. So that is a leadership fail on my piece, Marcus. And I share that with the audience and I share some pictures with them. And I'm not there to drag them down emotionally, right? So my job is to edutain a crowd. I make them laugh. I make them cry. I make them laugh again. Okay. But when we get down in the weeds and we're learning these leadership 101 lessons, it's not about safety, because safety, quality, productivity, those three balls that your people juggle every single day, you expect them to do it. You expect them to make a product, make it with quality. And oh, by the way, you can't hurt or kill anybody while you're doing it. But because we are productive kind of people, we tend to want to get to producing. And that pressures us to maybe take a shortcut in a moment. And that's what I did with my brother. It ultimately cost him his life. So leadership is really about doing it correctly yourself, walking the talk. And when you're out there juggling those balls, those three balls in your world of energy, right? That energy that we talked about, combustion, inertia, gravity, those are the big three that'll kill you. So when you're juggling the safety, quality, productivity ball, and keeping them airborne, you just doing it right every time, making sure your words are congruent with your deeds, because at the end of the day, you will influence somebody's future behavior down the road to do something errantly and unsafely. And you may not even know you did it. So I had the fortunate or unfortunate, however you want to look at it, of the investigators going in and investigating that accident and then looking inside the engine and saying, hey, this motor had signs and indications of a hydraulic lock. Did you guys always pull that propeller blade through? And I'm like, oh. And you know, those investigators, they know the answer. They know the answer before they ask the question. They just want to see how you answer it. So anyway, when he asked me that, Marcus, I mean, the silence on the telephone line on my end, it told him his answer. So, and he interrupted that silence. He said, hey, well, we went and asked the last person that saw your brother alive and the pilot that left. He said, we asked the guy to put fuel in the airplane, what he remembered seeing. And the fuel guy said, you know, I don't remember those guys pulling that propeller blade through before they started that engine. He said, but I do remember them being in a big hurry to leave here because they were running late for some air show down in Florida. Now that was a gut punch to me. Now, Marcus, after that accident, okay, investigation's over, everything's settled, I know the answers, I know what went on. My brother, of course, took that shortcut to the grave with him. Only myself and only my brother knew about it. So here I am, the supervisor, the boss, the leader, the foreman of that air show business, right? My brother wasn't a pilot. I was a pilot. When I heard that, I wanted to blame everybody but me. I wanted to blame Craig, who was the pilot that day. He was pilot in command. I wasn't even on the job that day. I was 800 miles away. I even wanted to blame my brother. Hey, he's the operator. He knows the rules as good as me. He knows what to do. What's he mean? But you see, if I'm going to grow as a person, as a leader, as a parent, as an airline captain, which I'm an airline captain today, I had to reflect inward. I had to own my peace. And when you start to own your peace, and I mean own those things that nobody saw you do, no one's looking over your shoulder, you make a mistake, those are the pieces, those near misses where you got lucky. We can't just rely on luck in our world of energy. When you get lucky, that's the time to take a breath and count your lucky stars, but then go and share that information, because you didn't do it because you were stupid. You just did something stupid. We're not stupid people, but boy, we've done a lot of stupid things in our life, and we've all gotten lucky. And I've learned to share those near misses and those close calls. And when you do that, yeah, people might call you stupid. They might roll their eyes at you. They say, oh, I've never done that before. I would never do that. But at the end of the day, when they're working by themselves and they feel that pressure come on, they might feel the pressure to do the same stupid thing that you did. And they're not stupid. So that's what I mean by sharing those experiences. Begin. Experience is that thing you get after you need it, unless you listen to the experiences of those who've gone before you. You know, we have to learn from the mistakes of others. You won't live long enough to make them all on your own.
And thank you for sharing that. I know that's a big lesson to learn. And I love that you said the right word. You said rationalize.
Yes.
And we understand it at the time because it's a rational lie.
Correct.
That we tell ourselves to justify the behavior for just this one second. But that one single moment can change everything.
100%. And you don't even really think about it, Marcus, because you know it just is so insidious.
Yes.
It just creeps up on you, sneaks in. You don't wake up in the morning expecting to go run a red light. So you wake up in the morning, you go through your day, you're in a hurry, you've got a meeting to make, you're just behind, and all of a sudden, you know, you look way off in the distance and you see that the light is green and it's way out there, and you're like, oh dude, I'm never gonna make the green light. So you start easing off of the gas, easing off, and as you get closer and closer, the light's still green. Now what are you thinking? Oh, my expectation is I'm gonna make it. I mean, so then your foot gets heavier and heavier on the skinny pedal. And all of a sudden, the light turns what color? Bam, turns yellow. Yep. Now you have a decision to make. And I mean right now, do I hit the skinny pedal harder or do I hit the fat pedal? And so that is a decision that you make in a moment. And I equate it to being out on the job. Which pedal are you going to hit, the skinny pedal or the fat pedal, when you have the yellow light? So some people say, oh, it's a go faster light. But, you know, we are just productive people. And as humans, we don't like being inconvenienced by slowing things down, stopping the work, asking questions, pulling out the checklist and going over it again. So those are items that I try to reinforce when I'm up there speaking to a group. It takes courage to speak up. And by God, it takes more courage to listen. And, you know, looking back, reflecting back on my brother's accident and that incident, that moment that I told him, don't worry about it, let's go. Now, clearly, that was a wrong decision from a boss, from a supervisor. It was nothing big. It was something small. He gave me that quizzical look. Now, that is what I would call a nonverbal cue. We get many nonverbal cues from our workmates, and they come in a quizzical look. They come in an eye roll. They come in a sigh. They come in when they just turn and walk away. So as a leader, and again, this is leadership 101, that you don't have to be in a formal leadership position. You don't have to have the title. You are a leader. You personally, everyone, I don't care how long you've been with the company, how short you've been with the company, every person in a room has the ability and the power to influence another person's future thought behavior, perception of value, work behavior, what they do. It can be good, bad, or indifferent, but you are influencing people whether you realize it or not. And I didn't really get that piece when I was sitting up there in the cockpit telling my brother, hey, don't worry about it. I wasn't paying attention to the size of the shadow I was casting in his eyes. So that's something else I tell people is you have to walk the walk, because your shadow, whether you think it or not, is bigger than you realize. And people are watching and learning and listening from you more than what you say, everything you do. And you nailed it. So I didn't know. How did you say that? Acta non verba?
Acta non verba. Actions, not words in Latin.
That's the first I'd heard that actually being said. And I'm like, oh my, and the goosebumps popped up on my arm. I'm like, oh, that's perfect. That's exactly it. Because it is a timeless message. That very thing, it is absolutely timeless. And so when I'm able to go up and say that in front of a crowd, they're hearing it from me and not from dad, that they hear it from all the time, either their boss or whoever, all these safety meetings, they're the same over and over until the neighbor comes in and they don't know and tells them the same thing, but from using a different cart, if you will, of goods to share. So again, it's nothing new. It's just bringing in quality and value, as you say. That's
absolutely
it.
and it's that alternate route that maybe is the one that they need to listen to. And it's so true in the military, in the Army, you know, before in light infantry, it was PCCs and PCIs, pre-combat checks, pre-combat inspections.
Yes.
And there's books like the Checklist Manifesto and all these things that you're talking about where a checklist is made intentionally. It's not meant to slow people down. Something's happened in the past that made us say, we need to write that down and make sure people don't do it again, right?
100%. We've all heard the saying, it's written in blood. Something I share with the audience, and it's right exactly in that vein. I tell people, don't get stuck in your rearview mirror, all right? There's a reason the rearview mirror in your car is only this big. It's small. Now, there's information in that rearview mirror, but you don't drive forward staring at it. You glance at it. Everything in that mirror is what's behind you, and it is why you do what you do. It's why. It's not how. It's why. So when people go, why are we doing it that way? You say, hey, bro, come over here. Take a peek in this rearview mirror. Just take a look. This is why we do it. Now, the big window is out in front. Out in front of you is how you do it. It's how you keep the car out of the ditches. It is the checklist. It is the books. It is the teaching. It is the coaching and the mentoring, listening to the experience of those who've gone before you. It is personal value-based leadership. It's making the right decisions. It's carrying the right attitude. It's committing to the safety procedures that your company has in place for you. You might not like them, but you have to follow them until you change them. Because if you don't, then you're sending the message that, well, some of these rules are written for us to follow, and some we've kind of learned on our own and we'll just do it ourselves. No, you have to change them. Get engineering out there, retool it, rethink it, retrain it, whatever you need to do as an organization, but don't in run the rule because it's convenient for you that day, because you never know what other rule they're in running out there. Also, the rearview mirror piece is that's what's behind it. A lot of people dwell in their rearview mirror because they're so heartbroken through what they've done or a loss, and they just can't move forward. And so to that, I say, listen, don't let your past define you. Let it prepare you. Just let it prepare you, learn from it, take a breath, share it, and then move forward. Look out the rearview mirror and just don't repeat the past. Just learn from it. Keep pressing.
I love that because in life, in the military, in business, there are no rewards. There are no punishments. There are simply repercussions based on preparation or lack thereof.
Huge. Huge. That's right. And that's yeah. And you did that military thing. I was in the Air Force. People asked me, were you in the military? I'm like, no, man, I was in the Air Force.
No, doing what you were doing as a fighter pilot, like what little I've looked into some of it between the OODA loop and like all these gauges you have in front of you. Plus you get all these Top Guns awards and stuff. Don't discredit yourself. Let people understand what it takes to do those kind of things. Like what percentage of people can do those things? What capacity physically you have to develop over time? I mean, these things are tremendous.
They are, you know, but it's no different than anything in life. where you have to develop a skill set. You have to have the capacity to sit there and learn. And we had very good training, as you did in the military. As a lot of these organizations that I go out and I speak to, their training is par excellence. They absolutely train them well. And that's why, Marcus, it's so frustrating to the leadership when they go out and do something stupid, because you don't hire stupid people, but they will do some stupid things. And they're like, why is it? Well, it's human behavior. They're out there juggling those three balls and it gets easy for them. And next thing you know, there's something on their mind while they're working other than work, and the inattention to detail, lack of focus, or whatever it is. And they end up dropping one of those balls. And it's usually nothing big, it's something small. But enough small things at least can lead to something big. And that's just not a good day. And a lot of times people kind of know what's going on out there, because I talk about culture, right? Culture is a tremendous influence over our work behaviors, how it's done around here, right? We've all heard that. Oh, yes. How we do it around here. I drew something for the audience to kind of visualize when I'm up there speaking. I had this thought of, everybody in the audience is a leader, right? I call them target leaders. So how does each person in an audience possibly influence safety and quality or productivity in their work? Because they have, hey, I'm just Joe Bag of Donuts. I come in, I badge in, I come in, I put this widget over here. I don't do it. You know, so-and-so does their job, they do their job, and I just do mine. And they are in the seat to see how it's done. They can see all the little shortcuts. They can see all the little things that are being done outside of what's correct. So they have their finger on that pulse. And that's the job culture, right? That is how it's done around here. They also have their finger on the pulse of how it should be done. That's company culture. That's the vision, the values, the beliefs, the expectations. That's the vision you should be seeing out in front of your car. But they also see a little tainted vision over here. Maybe there's some dirt on their windshield they hadn't cleaned off. Maybe there's a snow they haven't scraped off. So, yeah, I'm good to go. I can see good enough. Off they go. So it's having the courage when you see an arrhythmia between those two pulses, how it should be done versus how it is done. You're in that catbird seat to speak up and say something. And, you know, if you happen to be the person that you're spoken up to, don't get upset. Don't take it the wrong way. Just take it as your brethren speaking up to you to try to help you along to do it right. Doesn't always work. I get it. But you never know when it does. But one of the antidotes that I give them is the B-52 crash that involved Bud Holland. He was a very experienced B-52 pilot, ended up crashing in front of a bunch of people, including the co-pilot's wife and three kids, were out of this. They were prepping for this air show. And this guy was a hot dog. You know, he's a bit of a gunslinger in the cockpit, Bud Holland. But people knew that about him. So you had basically two sets of cultures in that squad. You had one set of culture leadership that's like, ah, he's got experience. He knows what he's doing. He's not going to kill anybody because he's that good. Yeah, I know that it is dangerous, but it's okay. If you want something crazy done, get old Bud Holland, do it, just look the other way. But then you had another set of leaders that was like, no, we have to change that mindset, because you're teaching the young guys how to break the rules and still live. And they might not have the experience or the knowledge that Bud Holland has to get themselves out of the crack they get themselves into flying the airplane. So you had these two things going on. Of course, the crash happens. It was televised. But my question to the audience is, let's all put ourselves in that squadron. I basically demote them all out of their job. I'm like, okay, you're no longer with ExxonMobil. You are now a current and qualified B-52 pilot in that squadron. And Bud Holland is a personal friend of yours. You know him, you've trained with him, et cetera. So I build them up that way. And I'm like, okay, now let's pretend on the day of this crash, because I show them the crash. I show it to them and they get to hear the wife talk about it. So they're very emotionally involved in this. And so I tell them, okay, I'm pointing now to the fireball, right? I pause it on the fireball. And I'm like, all right, the day of that crash, let's pretend that you're not even at work. You're at home when this happens. It's your day off. So you're at home, you're, you know, 50 miles away, and your supervisor at work calls you at home. And your phone rings, you look at it, you're like, oh, what's he doing calling me at home? He said, it's my day off. It's not good that your supervisor is calling you on your day off. So he calls you. Says, hey, man, listen, did you hear we had a crash today? We lost 5 people were killed, lost an airplane. You'd be shocked. You'd say, oh my God, what happened? Who was it? And for argument's sake, what if your supervisor told you to guess? Guess who it was? Dude, it would take you about 2.3 seconds to throw out a name. You'd say, was it Bud Holland? And your boss would go, yep, that's the one. And your only response to that is, I knew it. So my question to all of you is, who and where are your Bud Hollands? Don't have to throw out a name, okay, here in this crowd, but you all know probably a Bud Holland. If it's out there taking risk, and you all probably just roll your eyes or you look the other way or you give them the grace or whatever. If you happen to know a Bud Holland, listen, go talk to that individual. If you happen to be a Bud Holland, like I was in my squadron as a young fighter pilot, I was brash, egotistical, and you're right, I did have a lot of accolades. I graduated top in my pilot training class. I did win a lot of awards. And you know what? I started believing what the people were telling me about myself. I did think I was all that in a bag of chips. And then what you don't understand is when you don't have all the experience and all the chips in your bag because you're young and stupid, you don't know what you don't know. But the old heads, fighter pilots, knew it. And they sat me down and gave me a good talking to. And it really humbly put me in my place. And then that's what helped me kind of start learning and growing as a young fighter pilot into a flight leader, 4-ship flight lead, combat search and rescue qualified, Top Gun winner, et cetera. So it helps you. It's good to have confidence, but not overconfidence. You need to have confidence in your work. Anyway, that's something I talk about with the audience. And it only takes maybe 15 minutes to set that whole thing up, run that quick video, and get them emotionally involved and then start plating up those questions. And I tell them, hey, you might not know about a Holland. It might be something else. It might be a rule, a tool, a policy, a procedure that people are always in running around. But if you ever got a phone call and they were saying, hey, guess what happened? And you were able to guess, this is your time. This is your moment to come forward and start talking about what's really going on back there.
I think that's a tremendous, tremendous example because we can see it in any state, right? Whether we're leading a small team or leading a huge multimillion dollar company, it's absolutely there. It's undeniable. And it shows that we're aware of it. We see this elephant in the room, but we're all agreeing to dance around it. We don't want to say anything about it. But if it's that obvious and people know about it, then we might as well do something or might as well call it out because everybody's already thinking it. And the only time they're going to actually have the courage to look at it oftentimes is you get punched in the face with some sort of adversity. And whether it be a fine or whether it be somebody losing their life, if it's something that we can look at, as you say, if we can use that hindsight now and reflect on this experience that we already have to create the checklist and SOP, procedures, policies, a culture that is self-policing, then why are we trying to resist it, right?
Huge. That's why I ask them, where are your I knew it moments? Where are they? Before you experience a real, I knew it. So yeah, that's you're spot on. But you know, it's so difficult too because to speak up. Let's say because when you're with a group of your buddies that you know very well, and you're a band of brothers. You work in this high risk and dangerous work environment. You're used to putting each other's lives on the line. You trust each other literally with your life in many of these professions. So when you're doing that and you have that trust, for example, lockout, tag out. Hey, did you lock out, tag out that equipment before I'm over here on this end? Yeah, I got it. Instead of verifying absence of voltage, you just trust your buddy. And the next thing you know, you get into it and you're as dead as a mackerel and it happens. You die. I call it beat. You die completely relaxed. You never feel it. It just hits you. So you don't even have a chance to tense up. And you're all over but the crying. And that's how deadly the world of energy is that we live in. It's around us all the time.
Exactly what you're describing is what? Mediocrity. And that's how deadly mediocrity can be. And as you say, it's omnipresent. It seeps in when we're not aware of it. And the reason in the military why we always have the SOPs is because we assume that guy is sleep deprived or stressed out or hasn't had food for a while or has a lot of things going on. And so people will laugh when they see like the Claymore mine, and on the front of it, it'll say face towards enemy.
Bam. Yeah.
And people laugh about it. But if you've ever set one of those things up, like I have,
yeah,
and realized that you're going to be the one that's hit that clicker.
Yeah.
If you can't remember that you've tried to face it out four or five times, then you're afraid to hit that clacker when the time comes.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And I like that because fatigue does play a risk. That fatigue does, and when you're so tired at the end of the day, your brain is fuzzy. I've, you know, fun missions where I'm literally having to count on my fingers, you know, 4 + 3. I'm like, 4 + 3, was that what? How many? 4 or 5? You're so brain dead and tired and task saturated. You can just really lose focus. And that's something you need to understand is when is task saturation dangerous? So when is fatigue dangerous? And that's why it's important when you go to work and cross that threshold and badge in that you are ready for work. A lot of people go to work and their minds are a million miles away. They're got so much. We have personal lives going on, stuff in our personal lives, whether it's maybe going through a divorce or a sickness or financial problems, all this stuff. And you can carry that baggage through the door. And I have to be careful when I walk through that cockpit door. You know, I'm the boss applesauce. I'm in charge of 3 other pilots, 330 souls on board, and 14 flight attendants, and we're going to fly halfway around the world. I have to make sure everybody's mind is clear, including mine. So we keep the main thing, and just you have to stay focused. I charge everybody to, A, make sure your mind's right. And when there's decisions that are going to be made here, I'm the boss. I'm ultimately going to be making the decision. But I do not care about who is right. I care about what is right. And when you want to do things the best way, not just your way as the boss, and you begin to incorporate a lot of people's thoughts into your decision, you end up doing a lot of listening, and you just kind of filter out the good and the bad. And then you really ask probing questions. You don't just tell things, you just ask questions, because there's a lot of good thinking from people who don't have the experience and knowledge that you have, but they got something, and that something might be a piece of the answer you're looking for. And you would have never gotten it if you hadn't just shut your mouth and just listen to them, look at them in the eyeball, and just give them the head nod and then ask questions back so they know that you're hearing them. Now, when you ultimately let them make a decision, Marcus, they might not like the decision you make, but let me tell you, there's a much greater chance they will support you in that decision that you've made because they know you've made that decision unselfishly. It doesn't benefit yourself. It doesn't make you any higher on the totem pole in management's eyes. You've made that decision because it's the best decision given all the information. And you also have to be flexible in your decision. Don't sell yourself on this one thought, this is the way, the truth, this is how we get out of here. No. If you put your decision in place and you think it's good and you're pressing forward with it and it ain't working out, buddy, put your pride on the shelf, back out of it, turn to that person who had another good idea, don't care who it is, and say, okay, tell me your thoughts again, because obviously what I'm doing, I don't think is working out as well as or quickly as it should be. What are your thoughts? Give it to me. Let's see, let's try to run with that. So, you know, that's putting pride on a shelf as a leader and being able to pivot off of one decision and going off to it and making another one if you need to.
And I think that's a great point. How many CEOs do we see or C-suite executives that are at the top of this huge pyramid of people? It is impossible for them to have a finger on the pulse of every single person on the ground, in the field, that's moving this piece of heavy machinery, right? It's impossible.
Yep.
So they have to be able to trust their people, and they have to be able to listen. And again, that comes back to that communication. The other thing is, I love that you pointed out, is people talk about communication all day, but it's about comprehension.
Yeah. Yep.
You're listening to them. You're feeding back and saying, this is what I'm hearing. Is that what you're saying? And now that gives you the capacity, like you said, you put your ego on the shelf, because as the leader, it's our responsibility ultimately, but we're trying to find everybody else's opinion, because there's a very good chance they see something that we don't, that they know something that we don't, that they've worked in this position or with this person or in this situation before we have, and they know something. And if we're willing to ask them what that is, what else does that do? That gives them buy-in. Now they feel like they're part of the answer, and they are more receptive and willing to execute against this plan because they had say in it.
Preach, brother. Preach. That's exactly it. I call it listen to understand, not to argue. And it doesn't mean when your mouth is shut and your ears are opening and you're listening to somebody, people have a hard time with keeping their mouth shut because they think in their brain, if I'm not saying anything back to them, that means they think I agree with what they're saying. No, it doesn't mean you're agreeing with it. It just means you're taking in and understanding where they're coming from. You're getting it from their perspective. And getting perspective is big in any world where you're trying to make the best decision. Some people want to, you know, listen to argue, and they fight to be right, not for what is right. And then you end up, you get nowhere with that. So that's something I have learned as I've gotten older, is just keep your mouth shut and just listen. You will learn something. Somebody will have something to tell you. But one old captain told me, he did a lot of listening himself. And I just told him, I'm like, dude, what, why are you listening to that? That was the stupidest suggestion I've ever heard. He just grinned. He goes, well, there's no sense getting mad over an argument you've already won. So what he meant by that is, I'm not going to argue, but I'm going to listen. I'm going to take it all in, and then I will make my decision. I'm like, God, that's so brilliant. And you will win all the arguments. And it's not about you needing to win these arguments. What I'm saying is, just as a rule, you want everybody to be a winner if you can. So not everybody's going to like decisions. Not everybody's, but for the most part, they will get on board with you.
And again, it comes back to that. You're talking about leadership being self-leadership, which I absolutely agree with, because it begins with us. And what are you doing? If I give this in, if I create this environment where I'm listening to everybody and I'm not trying to interrupt them, and I'm not trying to say where they're wrong, or I'm not trying to fix it, what do I make them? They feel felt, they feel heard, but they feel like they're being listened to, which encourages other people to hopefully give them the same grace later on, or they execute the same grace towards other people. And now all of a sudden, how many times, if we just shut our mouths for an extra 15 seconds,
oh, yeah,
the question that I was going to have, or the point that I was going to come back with, or the example that I'm asking for, just magically rolls out of that person's mouth because I had the discipline to just shut this thing for a second, and they give me all of it and more. And now they don't feel interrupted or disrespected or frustrated because I didn't let them finish their sentence in the first place.
Yep, 100%. And you know, a lot of that leadership stuff was brought out and taught to young captains and older captains. And this was done back in the 80s under crew resource management, CRM. They found that, you know, we need to teach leadership. We need to teach that basic communicative leadership in the cockpit, because before, the captain was the captain. He would be like an old lead lineman. I've been out here for 40 years. I got, as an old captain would say, I got more time flying upside down than you got sitting on the toilet. You know, I got, if I want your opinion, I'll ask me for it, but don't count on it. You know, so what that does is it taught the crew members to not speak up. Only worse, it would teach them, or they would actually fly and hope that the captain made a mistake. They hope that he screwed up. They hope that he turned down the wrong taxiway. They hope that he crossed a runway without clearance. And that way, when they got in front of the board, they could tell, well, he told me to sit on my hands and be quiet. He told me he had more time flying upside down than on the toilet. So it was the antithesis of what you needed in a high-performing organization. So now they are empowering everybody. You all have a piece to say. There's one decision. One person's going to make a decision, but everybody has a piece. We want to hear your voice on that cockpit voice recorder at the end of the day if you see a captain make a mistake. And that's the thing, is now our rules, our policies are so very linear, very strict, and so black and white that I tell my crew, look, my skin is as thick as my skull. If you see me doing anything outside of training or outside these manuals, this book, you better speak up and you say something, and I promise I will listen. And if I've said something to you or I've given some instructions and you don't understand it, don't walk away going, what did the old man say? It means I need to do a better job of explaining to you where I'm coming from. It's on me, not you. It's up to me to make sure I'm getting my point across. And that goes the other way around. I promise I will ask you for clarification. I may have to ask you 10 times, where you're coming from, what do you mean, where did you get that information, how does that come? And we will dig it. We will dig in the manuals. We'll find it out. We'll expand our team. We'll get on the phone, the back phone. I'll make a satellite phone call if I have to back to the company. And they are there. They will answer that phone on the third ring. I could be halfway across the Pacific Ocean and I can make a phone call back to company and I can expand the team and get answers. And it takes work to do that, Marcus, but that is the training and the of what you want to do to keep a high risk and dangerous work environment. That's not dangerous. You got to mitigate those risks by doing that.
I agree. And so you studied so much of leadership from being in it. Can you tell me a leader that from the past is already gone? Who is a leader that you would love to have a conversation with if time, space, and language was not a factor?
Wow. That's a great question. Because in my audiences, I sort of ask the same thing because I tell them all, hey, leaders influence behaviors, right? That's the basic definition of a leader. Any of us has the power, if you're standing over somebody, to light a fire under their butt so that they do it right in that moment, right? When you're standing over their shoulder, yipping at them, yeah, they're going to do it right. But how are they going to behave when you're gone? What keeps them on the right path then? And a lot of times, it's usually somebody who's inspired you to do it right, even though they're not there. So I encourage them, hey, think about those characteristics of people in your life, whether it's a parent, a family member, a good friend, or a coworker who's not even around anymore. Maybe they've gone and retired. What are the qualities and the characteristics that they had in them that inspire you to do it right or just to walk the correct path and bring it into others? What is that? What are those qualities? And we hit on a lot of them today. We hit on they're not very prideful. They're humble. They admit mistakes. They're honest. They listen to understand. There's many of these great inspirational leadership qualities that you want to emulate going forward. So, wow, in my world, you know, aviation is just, it's just one of those, there's so many good inspirational people in aviation that I would love to sit down and just have just a good old bourbon with, you know, maybe they smoke an old raspy cigar and we can sit down and just tell some lies. Amelia Earhart comes to mind. Oh my gosh, what an incredible, courageous person to push through barriers. So that would be one. Charles Lindbergh, that would be another one. I would love to hear his thoughts and ideas of how he did what he did. Howard Hughes is another eclectic person, but I would love to sit down and just hear from him. And going forward, this guy, Elon Musk, he intrigues me, dude. That guy is brilliant, in your face. And just, there's just so many of these different people that I would just like to talk to. Not that I want to be like them, but I'm telling you, there's just a lot of nuggets in people, even from people you might not like. If you can just sit down and, you know, you might not like your plumber, but hey, he keeps the water out of your basement. So he might have an interesting experience or a story. And so if you sit down with him, you might glean some nuggets out of those nebulous nuggets, some needless knowledge. So, yeah. I don't know. What about you? Who would you think of? Who could you?
Man, there's so many people. Bruce Lee, for me, because of the martial art experience, but also because that philosophical application in the real world, the idea of absorbing what is useful, discarding what is useless, and adding specifically your own. Machiavelli, just because he's so sort of in your face. Miyamoto Musashi, because of the time that he was in, 61 duels to the death, survived all of them. And wow, this whole idea of even Buddha or Jesus, like going back to these people that had this huge impact, but they were still able to use these principles that we're discussing, that if we're really honest, they will often overlap. There are many commonalities in these leadership skill sets.
100%. And you know, everybody that you named there to me comes across as being an amazing person, but they seem to be very humble. They seem to have a very humble aura about them. They're not braggadocious. You know, we had a saying in our squadron, the fighter pilot, we love to go fly and fight against those who bragged a lot because they normally could not back it up. But then some could. So, and those are the ones you just hate. You don't want to be like them. You're like, son of a bitch, he keeps running his mouth, but yet he can back it up. So yeah. Anyway, but again, those are qualities when you are good at what you do, but you're humble about it, and you have that self-deprecating way about you. People, you just let your actions speak for how you do your job. People will notice. They'll go, wait, you are very good at this, then, but he's not bragging about it. So everybody that you named there seemed to have this humble aura, but were very good at what they were doing.
And I think that speaks to the subtext of that, which is this idea that they didn't try to prioritize everything. If everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. So they focused on two or three things and they truly mastered just that thing. So as we were saying before, how there was no decision fatigue, there was no like competing priorities to them. It was like, it's either in this lane or it's nowhere else. And I'm going to focus on this thing and I will get so good at it because of the simplicity. Again, it almost makes you feel silly if you were to ask them a question that's superfluous because it has nothing to do with it. They're like, is that really what I'm trying to work on here? Is that in my lane? Is that going to make me a better leader, fighter, pilot, et cetera? No, then why am I even considering that? Right?
Right. Yeah, it's 100%. But, you know, as speaking of the inspiration, because we're talking about people who've inspired us, you read about them, you learn about them, you talk to others about them. That's why I asked you. So I didn't even really think of that genre of leaders that you would that inspire you, but that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, after my brother passed away, it was obviously a huge blow to the family. My brother and I were 15 months apart. We were very close. We grew up very, very close. So, of course, we're flying these air shows together, and in a moment, he was gone, in an instant. I never saw it coming. You know, everything in my life had been just going fantastic until his loss. And if you're just devastated, you don't even know, is there going to be a minute of a day where I'm not overcome with grief? Is it going to be, when am I going to get some relief of this grief? And, but, you know, over time, time is a great healer. It's a great teacher. But one of the, I guess, thing that gave us a lot of salve and was very therapeutic was to write a book. Not that I had anything to say to the world, but I just wrote a lot of my past experiences as a young pilot going forward. And the editor of the book was my mom, because she was one of those people who documented everything in our life. She was a, as my wife would say, she was a hoarder of memories. I thought, dude, that's perfect, because my mom just passed away at 83 last year, and she left me with a gazillion cassette tapes and VHSs and 8mm and the photo albums, and I knew she had it all, but I didn't know she had that much. So she was a hoarder of memories, but she had a memory that was just amazing. So I would sit down and I would write a chapter, and then I would send it to her, and she would read it and reflect on it and write some of her very wise thoughts, send it back. And, you know, and I would incorporate that. And we did that chapter by chapter, and it ended up being very therapeutic for both of us. But it ended up being managers manage, leaders influence, target leaders inspire. And when it was all done, Marcus, I was like, you know, because by then I was out speaking and sharing this story. I just didn't think that I would really inspire very many people, because I'm just a regular old Joe Bag of Donuts dude just going out and getting it done. I just didn't think that I would, you know, be much of an inspiration. And she said, and I passed this along to the audience. I'm like, hey, you don't think you're going to be much of an inspiration? Let me tell you, this is what mom said. You will not inspire everyone. You just won't. But you will inspire someone. And that may be all the difference in that person's life. That may be all the difference in that person being on a headline one day or down on a headstone. And there's a good chance that you probably won't even know it, you know? So what's going to be your legacy going forward? You know, how are you going to impact people? What legacy do you bring, and value and quality to someone's life? And so be that inspiration. They say, oh, leaders are born. Not really. Leadership is learned, brother. You gotta really think about it. You have to be quiet and listen. You want to get feedback from people. You might not like what they say, but if you're getting the same feedback over and over, it's time to look in the mirror and do a little inward reflection, because people are telling you that. You might not like the tone that they tell you, but you might not like the way or the choice of words they use when they're dressing you down, but try not to use that. Don't get offended by the tone, but take the words, just take the message to heart if you can. Anyway, that's something I usually pass along to my audience. And then I wrap up with, we all have a propeller blade that we have to pull through in life. And I encourage you, every one of you, grab that propeller blade and you pull it through every job, every time for the rest of your life, and get out there and lead. And then that safety and quality, productivity, whatever you're looking for, it'll come as a byproduct of just that value-based leadership.
Wow. Odie, I know that you've inspired me, and I know that you've inspired many people, not only live speaking, but in the audience that are listening to us right now. Thank you for your time, for your honesty, for your transparency, because frankly, those are the things that we are missing in leadership today. There are so many bad pieces of advice that flit around that are repeated because they sound pretty or they seem magnanimous, but they really have no substance or quality. And we need your message more now than ever. Where can we learn more about you? Where would you direct our audience to hire you to speak, to get the book, to have you consult or coach, whatever? Where will we go?
Thank you for that. You can just go to targetleadership.com or just Google my name. And believe it or not, it comes up, Jeff Odie Espenship. It'll pop up. But targetleadership.com, you can read about it. And then my office manager is Kathy Leland, and her email is Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, at targetleadership.com. And she is very responsive, very good at what she does. And we'd love to get you on the schedule. I'd love to come out and meet your team, whoever that is and wherever it is.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. Thanks, man.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Okta Nonverba. If this message resonates with you, please share it out with others on social media. Hit that subscribe button and leave a review for the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. To learn more, please go to MarcusAureliusAnderson.com and join his Okta Nonverba Inner Circle to get exclusive content, news, and information. Until next time, remember, talk is cheap. Live your life based on actions, not words.